Instead, I want you to go get her a sandwich. What? Yeah, you know.
Get her a hoagie.
Get her a hoagie. She needs some salami and cheese.
Everyone, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Podcast. This is episode 19. I'm Brian Sheely.
I'm Ryan Joy.
And thanks so much again, everyone, for tuning in. This episode, we're going to be talking about productivity and fruitfulness and what that really means from a biblical perspective. But before we get into that, we've got a Jesus Said segment, and I've got a verse for you on this topic of productivity and fruitfulness. And that is from Luke chapter 13, beginning in verse 6. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit on it and found none. And he said to the vine dresser, "Look, for 3 years now I have come seeking fruit on this fig tree, and I find none. Cut it down. Why should it use up the ground?" And he answered him, "Sir, let it alone this year also, until I dig around it and put on manure. Then, if it should bear fruit next year, well and good. But if not, you can cut it down." So what do you think?
So from a productivity standpoint, the core idea here is whenever you're given resources, you're meant to produce something from it. You are meant to bring about fruit, to bring about something for the vineyard owner and the one who is taking care of you. But there's also this idea here of a second chance and the idea of a last chance. One of the things you learn about God here is that God is going to give us a second chance, and there might be a third chance and a fourth chance, but also that God is going to, at some point, give us a last chance. So he says, give it some more time. Give it more resources, actually. This one that's not producing, give it more and see if it will produce. But if it still won't produce, that's enough. It has had its opportunity. And so the lesson for me is there have been times when I haven't been fruitful, but as I look around at my resources, I better make sure that I am doing something with everything God is giving me. What I need to be producing needs to be eternally productive, because that is the standard by which I'll be judged. And so judgment says everything I do needs to ultimately be evaluated by what God wants me to produce. So what do you see in this?
God is investing in us. And if we don't produce, if we're not being fruitful with what he's invested in us, he'll invest in us more. It's not that he's just given up or he only has a small amount of resources to give to us. But if we still don't produce, then like you said, that final chance of saying, okay, this is enough. But the expectation is, or the hope is, that we will produce on the first supply of resources. You don't want to have a tree that you're constantly having to monitor and baby and take care of and nurture all the time. Like, you don't want all of your trees to be like that. You want them to just do what they're supposed to do when they're given what you've given them.
I love that word, investment. I don't think I've ever experienced this with a plant, but I've experienced it with cars. And, you know, like, there are some cars you get the car, and I grew up driving used cars all the time. And there are some cars that they might be old, but they just take care of you. And, you know, you take care of them, they take care of you. And my dad always used to compare it to a cowboy's horse. You know, you do what you need to do to take care of it, it'll take care of you. But there are some cars that you just keep putting money into forever. And eventually you just say, I think I got a lemon here. And you have to junk it. You have to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And that's God seeing us, that he is going to invest in us. But at some point, some people, hopefully this isn't us, some people are a bad investment. And so why should he keep giving us time and opportunity and talents and energy and money and all the things he gives to us and us not produce anything for it?
Are we a good investment? Am I a good investment? You know, I'm an engineer, so I like to quantify things. I like to put things on spreadsheets. But in God's mind, as he's looking at this tree, he's quantifying it. He's saying, here is what it's producing. And what it's producing is not what was expected. And so there is a level there at which he makes a decision to say, enough is enough.
Man, you nailed it with this Jesus said passage. We already have covered so much ground in productivity from a biblical standpoint.
When you talked about wanting to talk through productivity on this episode, I had in my mind, like, how are we going to even talk about this? Like, you know, you go to the library and you see thousands of books on productivity. Yeah. It seems like everybody has a spin on productivity. And usually they all kind of boil down to like the 5 steps of being more productive or the 10 steps of, you know,
how's your system? How's your lists? How's your calendar?
And I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't see that in the Bible. But then as you start digging into it more, the discussion of fruitfulness from that perspective, if you really want to look at it from the conversation of fruitfulness, I mean, that's all over the Bible, everywhere.
Exactly.
So maybe not necessarily in terms of productivity, but in terms of fruitfulness, that idea of doing something with what God is giving you is definitely a worthwhile topic.
That's why I want to talk about that, because I think Christians get sucked into a broken, weaker perspective on productivity than what the Bible reveals. I think anybody who wants to be more productive from a secular perspective should think about some of these principles, but especially as Christians, we need to start understanding productivity is about produce. Fruitfulness is about produce. It's about what are you producing? You know, it's about what fruit are you bearing? I think even just making that little shift starts to help us to see a biblical perspective on it. We start to see, for one thing, that fruitfulness is about effectiveness. Whereas sometimes when we think of productivity, we think about efficiency. Productivity should be about effectiveness, not efficiency. There's a Peter Drucker quote that says, "Nothing is less productive than to make more efficient what should not be done at all." You know, I can do this quicker and I can do this better. And it's like, is that the right thing to be doing?
You know,
but when we understand that the point is, how can I be fruitful in your job, you know, in your everyday work, in everything you do, you know? Fruitfulness helps us to understand, I'm trying to, in everything I do, make a difference, bring glory to God in the way I do it. Whether I'm making a widget, whether I'm fixing a faucet, whether I'm, you know, doing laundry at home, whatever it is, work is a blessed thing. The curse of work in Genesis 3 is that it's going to be difficult. But the blessing of work in Genesis 1 and 2 is that God has given us something useful to do for us to reflect Him. He, in the first 3 days of creation, brought order to the world. You know, the first 3 days are Him separating things, light and darkness, the sky, the land, and the sea. And then the last 3 days of creation are Him filling up with abundance the things that He separated. And then He tells us, now be fruitful, subdue these things or make them useful for you and make something out of what I'm giving to you. And so we are His image bearers then, bringing fruitfulness, abundance, and order into the world. And you can see kind of the creative aspect and the organizing aspect of our work here as we make what we have into something. A culture, a city, a building, a farm, you know, we make these things into something, and all work is ultimately, or should be, an expression of love. Whenever we start to see that from a Christian perspective, all work is holy work, then we start to see, I need to be fruitful, not by my systems first and foremost, but by my character, and then let my character spill into my systems for productivity.
It's so easy for us to dive right into the how and the what, because the how and the what are really compelling and attractive. It's why we end up so oftentimes spending 9 hours out of a 10-hour allotment of time focusing on, like, how to find the perfect note card to do a presentation rather than actually writing the presentation. You know, it's why we spend so much time on these systems. And if only I could do my note taking in this way, or if only I could get my task manager set up in that way, rather than actually focusing on the task itself, it is a chase. Yeah. And it's something that we just want to focus on to the exclusion of what is most important. But if we get back, like you said, to the purpose of the whole thing, love and service to God, then loving God, serving other people, that informs the systems that we take on.
Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of jumping to the five steps to more productivity and not slowing down and stepping back and saying, what principles need to guide my productivity? Then systems and practices and habits come from the why. And so, for instance, the Bible talks a lot about planning. The Bible talks a lot about rest and having a big chunk of work time, but then a small chunk of rest time. The Bible talks a lot about control and what we should control and what we need to let go of control about. And I think so much of our thinking about productivity has to do with us trying to control things that we can't control and wanting so bad to control it. Jesus talks a lot about that our effectiveness comes from Him. And so going back and rolling our productivity, rolling our work to Him, abiding in Him and letting Him produce, honoring God with the work that we do. And then the idea of love, the idea of growth. So, you know, there's all these principles that the Bible lays out that it says, if you focus on these things, then that spreadsheet you need to build, that TPS report that you need to print out, you know, you're going to be more effective in printing out that TPS report if you focus on these principles.
Do you think sometimes we view the ways of being fruitful as these grand, epic, huge kinds of events that we undertake? Because I think sometimes, at least in my mind, you know, if I'm not making these big, giant moves, then sometimes I feel like I'm not being productive or that I'm not actually being effective. So in Matthew chapter 25, Jesus says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." There's an element of this productivity. There's an element of this fruitfulness that is about the little things, not just about these grand, broad, sweeping, large things.
The little things are sometimes really practical and small. And Jesus puts this in a really practical way whenever sometimes he'll do a miracle. You know, he's just raised someone from the dead, like Jairus's daughter. Well, what do you have to say, teacher? What can we do? How can I give my life to you? And his instruction after he does this in Mark 5:43 is, and he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. This is something that Emily P. Freeman points out in her book, The Next Right Thing, is Jesus would sometimes just say, here is the next simple thing you need to do, the next right thing to do. And it's a lot of times not a grand thing. It's a small thing. But if we can just find the step right in front of us, then we can move on. You know, imagine these people. They've just been dealing with their grief. They've lost their child. And then they see this great teacher who now has risen her from the dead. What is going on? I need to tell everyone. No, don't tell anyone. Instead, I want you to go get her a sandwich. What? Yeah, you know.
Get her a hoagie.
Get her a hoagie. She needs some salami and cheese or, you know, whatever they would eat. She needs some flatbread and some olives. Go and get it and bring it to her. She's going to be really hungry when she gets up from, you know, being dead. And so, you know, what a crazy simple thing. But it's, as you say, the little things. And I have a feeling they obeyed him in that little thing. Right. And then the next thing will reveal itself and you'll learn more about who Jesus is. And a lot of times we don't know the grand things. We don't know the big things. And Jesus kind of lays this out in a slightly bigger perspective whenever he, in Matthew 6 and verses 33 and 34, he talks about our worries. And a lot of times our work is tied to our worries and our need to be productive and our thinking that everybody's counting on us and everything has to get done. And how am I going to get all these things done? My deadlines are creeping up. And he says, tomorrow is something we shouldn't worry about. And today has enough trouble of its own. And seek the kingdom and his righteousness. So there's this, like, what is way out there ahead? What is the ultimate goal? Pursue righteousness and the kingdom of God. Grow God's rule in your life and in those around you and focus on that. But I'm not thinking too far ahead, because how do you even know what tomorrow is going to bring? And today has plenty of trouble, as we all know. And Jesus says some very true words. He knew today has a lot of trouble. So we focus on what's next and what we have to do today. And we don't get overwhelmed by the burden of the giant 25 next steps in the project that we have to try to figure out. We just focus on what's next. In the little things, we're faithful. And then we'll figure out the next thing when the next thing comes. Doesn't mean that there's no planning, but it recognizes the limit to our planning and that our future is in the hands of God.
And it's not to say that we just don't do anything today because we don't know what tomorrow will bring. That's not the idea of it either.
Yeah.
There is definitely this idea that we get even in Proverbs when the wise writer is saying in chapter 6, verse 6, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Without having a chief officer or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest." She's preparing, she's ready for whatever's going to happen in the future. She's doing today what she needs to do to prepare herself for the future. So there is this idea of preparation that's necessary. We do need to be ready for any eventuality.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to say that we're so worried about it that it just freezes us up or causes us to do nothing today.
It makes me think of another Proverbs passage about the excellent woman.
Oh, yeah.
Who fears the Lord at the end of Proverbs, and how she laughs at the future because she's planned for it. Because she's industrious every day, she's working hard, she's doing what she can, she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She knows that every day she's going to do what she can to serve her family and work hard, and God is going to take care of her. She fears him and she builds her life on that commitment. And then it says in verse 25 of Proverbs 31, "Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come." You know, she's able to not be overwhelmed by an uncertain future because of, it would seem, her confidence in God. She's a woman who fears the Lord. And because she knows that she's going to do what she needs to do each day as it comes.
Again, this is a daily thing that we're doing, and we're taking everything day by day. And the Bible talks a lot about walking. And in Ephesians 5 that we talked about a few weeks ago, he says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is." And I think that is kind of an overarching idea here. Just making the best use of our time.
Yeah.
How are you going to use that time? Are you going to use that time wisely? Or are you going to squander that time or waste that time? Because that is really the measure of how we walk. Again, I love spreadsheets. So if I'm just going to make a spreadsheet of my day and how I spent my time, how much time am I spending in useful, productive, fruitful kinds of work? And how much time am I spending doing things that are distracting from that goal or purpose?
Yeah, we just talked last week about how we spend our money, how we steward our possessions and still find contentment. And if you want to find out who you are and what's valuable to you, you look at what you do with your resources. You know, whether it's your money, you know, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Whether it's your time, who are you? Well, figure out, what am I doing with what God has given to me? God is giving me this space to grow. He's fertilizing and watering my roots and taking care of me. Now, what am I doing with it? And one of the big lessons I learned years ago that has had a tremendous impact on me is understanding that maybe my most precious resource is not my time, but my energy. You know, as far as resources that are going to need to be used for the Lord, we need to manage our time. And that's so important. Like you say, watch how you're spending your time. Think of it as a time budget. Measure that. And, you know, you only have, just like money, you only have so much time. But also, you've got to figure out how to manage your energy. Because if you have a block of 4 hours to do this heavy task and you don't have the mental or physical energy or whatever it takes for it, it's going to be less productive, even if you are spending your time on that and you are able to discipline yourself to keep going on it. You're going to hit roadblock after roadblock. But if we learn to manage our energy, to figure out what is going to restore and refresh our energy, to figure out how to use different energy levels for different kinds of tasks, you know, to be able to know I only have so many hours of maximum productivity in me today. And right now is one of those moments. So what is the most important thing, the most fruitful thing I can do today? And going and making sure that, you know, I'm keeping my commitments by using my energy well, that I'm serving my bosses, my clients, my family, everybody I need to serve with the maximum energy I have.
It kind of feels like the day spends me, you know, like, how do I spend my day? Well, by the end of the day has spent me.
Yeah.
And I don't have that kind of energy to be able to give anymore. I'm exhausted. I'm tired. I'm done. Mm-hmm. But in the morning is when I really have the most energy, the most resources available to me. And I feel like I get a lot of important things done in the morning. And then as the day stretches on, I know myself well enough to know that I'm not going to have that kind of energy later on. So I need to get this stuff done now. Maybe you're a different kind of person. Maybe you're a night owl. Maybe you're the kind of person who is most productive in the evenings. I probably used to be that way in college, but now I am definitely a morning person. And that's when I have the most energy to give.
Yeah.
So just knowing yourself, knowing what your typical energy level looks like, I think is important in figuring out where to stick those blocks of time, those areas of deep work that best match up with where you are.
And I am not a morning person.
Shocking.
Yeah. And my sweet spot for productivity starts up around 1 o'clock and it goes until like 8 o'clock at night. But that's also the witching hour, so to speak, for our family and children starting at like 5:30, my wife is like, I need some help. I need some backup. And now school's out, so even more so. It's not just babies all day, but it's, you know, babies and a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I have to then pack in as much productivity in the afternoon as I can. And then in the morning, try to set myself up to have that maximum productivity, put everything in place, do all the things that don't require that super high level of creativity or concentrated thought and still be productive whenever I'm not at my best, and then have everything ready to just roll whenever I have those pieces in place. So, yeah, I mean, like you say, planning, thinking about who you are, what you can do, and how you can maximize your resources is critical.
Yeah.
What we're planning to do with that time when we're at our best or whatever it is going to come from who we are and what we've aligned our hearts with. And so Isaiah says in Isaiah 32 and verse 8, but he who is noble plans noble things, and on noble things he stands. So if you want to find out who you are and if you're noble, what are you planning? What are you thinking about? What are you putting in place for the future? Look at your calendar. Look at your to-do list. Look at what you're excited about. And vice versa, if you want to plan noble things, then align yourself with noble things. As Paul says in Philippians 4:8, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is noble and worthy of praise, think on those things.
I think sometimes, and something that I struggle with, is judging my productivity, judging my fruitfulness by what it looks like to other people, by what they would call productive or by what they need or want. I have a hard time saying no to things. And one of my big struggles is if somebody expects something of me, I have this general tendency to always say yes, even though that might not be good for me. In Colossians 3, verse 23, Paul says, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. We have to be working not selfishly. We have to be working not just for other people or what they would think about something, but really the main purpose is working for the Lord. And sometimes working for the Lord means taking a break, recharging, saying no, creating some distance. And if we can see that, no, I'm not going to go to this gathering tonight, or I'm not going to go to this event that's happening, not because I'm antisocial or not because I don't want to be there, but because it would be more useful for me to use that time to rest, or it might be more useful for me to spend that time with my family who I haven't seen all week or whatever. I think those are helpful ways of leading our decisions in some of these choices we have to make every day about what we're going to do and how we're going to spend our time, how we're going to use our energy.
Yeah. And so if we want to be good stewards of what we have, part of that is growing those resources. And we understand that with money, time, we don't really feel like we can't add any more time, but we can increase our energy or decrease our resources and energy. And so rest is a part of that. Exercise can be a way of renewing and stretching our resources. There are times when I'm really out of shape, when I'm not eating great, when I'm not exercising, I'm not getting enough sleep, and my energy is depleted, and therefore my fruitfulness, my ability to glorify God in my service is diminished. And that's on me. The stewardship principle is that I will answer for what I am doing with what God has given me. But the other thing, this is something that's really helped me a lot, is the distinction between serving and pleasing.
Yeah.
This is so helpful because I too have a tendency towards pleasing. I want to make people happy, as Adrian calls me, a firefighter. Like, I put out fires. Something's wrong. Okay, I'm going to fix it. Everything's going to be okay. I'm going to put out that fire and make everybody happy again. And I love the King James version of what you just read, the Colossians 3:23-24, to serve not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God.
Yeah.
I love those two words. Eye service, that's one word in the King James, and men pleasers, that's one word in the King James. It's so easy for me to be a men pleaser and to try to make everybody happy, and that's not always the best way to serve. Sometimes I need to, whenever my boss is giving me something I need to do and saying this has to be done immediately, but that's going to mean that the last thing he gave me can't get done, I might have to say, okay, which of these two things do you want me to do? Because I want to serve you the best I can, but I can't do both of these. I know that you're not going to want to hear this, but which one?
I think sometimes that means that we have to make challenging decisions. We have to come to a point where we can say, is this really going to support my greater purpose of serving the Lord? Or is the only reason why I'm doing this really to make people happy or to please other people?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard question, because sometimes on the surface of it, it's hard to navigate what is being done out of selfish reasons or men-pleasing kinds of reasons or eye service kinds of reasons, and what's actually being done for more noble purposes.
Isn't it amazing how it seems like every practical topic and every part of our lives, whether it's parenting or money management or work, seems to layer on top of the whole fruit of the spirit conversation that we just had?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a good way to make sure that what you are doing is serving the Lord Jesus Christ is to see, is it led by love? Am I being led by gentleness, joy, peace? Those start to be a context that can lead us.
Yeah.
You know, Colossians 3 gives this interesting picture. It says, the peace of Christ will rule your hearts. And that word for rule is like an umpire in an athletic competition, as the Greeks would have them. And so it's like using peace as a determining factor. Is this peace leading me? And you can certainly, love needs to lead us. Is grace leading me? All of these virtues that we are to have in our lives. And if those things are leading you, then It's just another way of saying the Lord is leading you to do these things.
As we get into the challenge for this week, a couple weeks ago we talked about the common rule. And one of the things in that book on a weekly basis talked about Sabbath, and we discussed a little bit about what rest is all about and what this time of refreshing and building up our energy again is all about. So maybe for this week, it would be helpful for you to find a time this week to recharge. Do something that will build up your energy in service to the King.
Take care of the resources God has given you. This is not about selfishness. This is about finding a way to increase what you can do for the Lord and for those around you by making sure you're taking care of the gift He's given.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into the Bible Geeks podcast. You can find us on our website at BibleGeeks.fm. You can find show notes for this episode at BibleGeeks.fm/19. You can also contact us through our website. Just click the contact link and you can send us a message and get in touch with us. You can also find us on social media. We are /TheBibleGeeks wherever you might find us. And until next week, everyone, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
Shalom.